This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and Sirius XM Channel 371.
Wes, how we doing, man? How we feeling?
Feeling better. Thanks, Pack. Good to be with you. Glad you had a nice trip to the A yesterday to get things cranked up at the College Football Hall of Fame yesterday. And a couple of ACC teams in action yesterday. We got one more left to go later this morning. Wake Forest and the Tax Slayer Gator Bowl at 11 a.m. against Rutgers on ESPN. But, man, we finally made it to the end of the 2021 calendar, Pack. It only feels like we were here 10 years, right?
I am ready to usher this year right out of here. We got a little bit more work to do this morning with me and you and the dogs and everybody else. And then we got one more afternoon radio show, which has been moved up to 1 p.m. due to the college football playoffs. And I'm ready to say adios to 21. I got to be honest with you. This it's been a challenge. This has been one of those years that, like I said, between torn tendons and COVID and all the other nonsense we've been putting up with, I'm about ready to have maybe two big old ice cubes tonight, ushering in 22.
Oh boy!
Yeah, I'm about ready for it. I got to be honest with you.
Well, I'll tell you what we want to do today. We got a great show. John Curry will be here, bottom of the hour. Athletics director at Wake Forest, 8:30. Boo Corrigan, the AD at NC State, comes by, and obviously we are going to talk about all the events in San Diego that led to the cancellation of the Holiday Bowl, and kind of, you know, what did you learn, and then the aftermath, the postscript, being awarded a trophy for a bowl game, and then NC State and Dave Doran with some pretty sharp comments when he arrived back at the Murphy Center in Raleigh the other night. And then at 9:30, another guy who is approaching double digits. I saw yesterday Narduzzi got a mug. Buddy Boeheim and Kenny Pickett. How many appearances is this going to be for Buddy Boeheim, by the way?
Six. Six. He and Pickett tied. Six.
Wow.
I don't know if you saw the end of the show, Wes, but I got a note at the end of the show when Narduzzi's on and I handed him the mug. But I'd gotten a note from a Chuck Walsh who said he got a phone call from Leonard Hamilton, who was watching, and Leonard's upset at me and you, but he, really me, because he said, where's my mug? I know I've been – Pack told me last time I was on there, I've been on here more than anybody, where's my mug? And so, again, as you well know, I was going through the entire basement because I was hoping to find some additional mugs in it, and I found a box with like three or four in it. So one of those is headed – to Leonard Hamilton's office, all right? We don't have but a couple. Good. So that's going to Leonard. But he was watching and was upset that Narduzzi got his mug for his double-digit appearance and Leonard hadn't had his yet. But it's coming, Coach. It literally is in the mail. I promise you.
All right. Yeah, well, so are a lot of things in the mail. Let's
Yeah, but this one really is in the mail.
Okay. Oh, all right. Yeah, I'm with you. All right. Now, Kenny Pickett, and now today, Buddy Boeheim will tie Kenny Pickett? Is that right?
That is correct.
Oh, boy.
And Buddy's got Kenny more eligibility.
Kenny got a hat.
Yeah, Kenny got a hat. I wish he got a win last night, but then we'll get to all that stuff later on. But I think Buddy's got a chance to surpass him, given the fact that, hey, we're just getting cranked up. We're getting ready to turn the page in 22, and I got a feeling that Buddy's going to be on again. So, Kenny Pickett had a good run at the top, and we're rooting for Kenny, obviously, because he may end up in Atlanta or right here in Charlotte for his professional gig, and we're rooting for that, too. But I think Buddy Boeheim is primed to take the top spot in student-athlete appearances.
Yeah. Well, if we're going to find a hat, that's going to be a trick.
Don't have them. We are out of hats.
I know. We got to figure that one out.
You know, Wes, real quick, before you start going through all these numbers, I don't know about you, but you know we've kidded around about not having any merchandise, which is honest to God, we don't, and I don't understand it, but we don't. I have had at least three different companies contact me and go, Pack, we will print all of that stuff up you want, and I'm like, that is great. And I really do appreciate you trying to, you know, all these companies reaching out. But we don't own the rights to it. I mean, we don't own the rights to Packer and Durham and ACC. That's got to come from our owners, which would be ESPN. So thank you for the offers. Believe me, I wish we could do it. But it's got to come from Bristol. So I'm just giving that out there as opposed to email after email after email. I just want to get that off my chest.
Are you getting a few emails soliciting their expertise?
Yes, that's what I just said. I mean, there's companies that go, hey, we will print all this you want. T-shirts, hats, mugs, dog collars, I mean, leashes, frisbees, bumper stickers. I'm like, I would love to tell you green light and go, but we don't own the rights, so we can't do it. If it was Southern Fried Football, totally different story. We're rolling, baby. We're printing stuff, but we don't own the rights. So maybe in 22, the worldwide leader will come up with some merch for us. That's what I'm wishing for.
May we change the name of the show to Southern Fried Football?
Well, listen, we can do that, but I'd charge ESPN a fortune for it. I can tell you that right now because I got the logo and it's all trademarked and it's been that way for 20-some-odd years. And and believe me, the legal department at ESPN is well aware of Southern Fried Football. They know the details.
Right. Yeah, that's right. All right. On December 31st, our final show of the current calendar year, it's important that we thank everybody for not only a great year and for watching Packer and Durham, but also to the people who helped make the show go. And it's not Pack and me. It is, in fact, the student athletes, the coaches, the guests, the media folks who join us, fans who call and participate, with their favorite ACC school. And our one thing we do is we keep pretty good books around here about number of times guests have been on and totals and things like that. And just to give you an idea, we've had 297 different coaches, players, and administrators on the show in 2021. And those are only the school-related guests. Doesn't count former players, analysts, people currently playing or coaching or administrating at current institutions. I mean, we've got 32 different guests from Florida State. That's the most of any school. Carolina's second. They had 30 people on the show. We had a tie for the most frequent guest of 2021. That's also an interesting one. Ironically, Leonard Hamilton, Dave Clawson, and Pat Narduzzi each came on 6 times. You see? This is how we get to the situations with hats and mugs with people. We had 2 guests last year that now count for 2 different schools. Pack.
Yep. Tony Elliott, Dan Radakovich. Different shades of orange. That's it. They go from a shade of Clemson orange to a Virginia orange to a Miami orange. So we kept it all in the family. Yep. There. But it's all good.
Yeah. No. So, and we start out today in some ways by thanking sports information directors at each of these ACC institutions as well. On this New Year's Eve, and we start with Florida State, and Chuck Walsh and Derek Satterfield and Stephen McCartney and all these folks do a great job helping us get people from Tallahassee on this program. And so we thank the sports information directors at Florida State. Each of these various sports have all helped us during the course of the year with guests on Packer and Durham. And you'll see all 15 institutions represented today. Yeah. Because those are the folks, they are the juice in this program and really kind of the juice in this network. And we should thank them every day for the help and the support they give us on Packer and Durham as we build this program and quite frankly, build the Atlantic Coast Conference television network.
Yeah, so. Wes, we get in front of the parade. We basically are the show dogs that just get out there and pretend like we know what we're doing, and we really don't. We try to keep it between the ditches from 7 to 10 a.m. Monday through Friday. But these are the folks that are really – I mean, we got the smart people up in Bristol, and then you got everybody who's really doing the heavy lifting at each and every one of these schools when it comes to players and coaches and administrators. Number one, tell the story, and we just kind of – like I said, we kind of get in front of the parade – and kind of lead it down the right direction, and hopefully we can get to the end of Main Street. But, man, there's a lot of incredibly talented men and women in this conference and really around the country, and we obviously are going to promote the ACC on our network, but this is true for all the SIDs around the country that are just great at what they do and really make broadcasters, a lot of stuff that you do, the professional ranks and play-by-play games. Without them, I mean, you're kind of no man's land because they supply such great information and stats and figures and the stories, which I think all of us as fans love to sit back and hear. Yeah, we watch games and we'll sit there and talk about it. Can you believe so-and-so won or that player, whatever. But the storylines in college athletics are so great and so fascinating and always changing. And the SIDs and all these different departments do a brilliant job supplying the information to us so we can kind of go out and literally tell the story.
Yep, exactly right. And Florida State helped us as well as all these other schools. You'll see them profiled as we move through the morning here on Packer and Durham. All right, when we come back, we dive in because here goes another sequence of ACC bowl games. Battle of the Carolinas in Charlotte and last night in Atlanta. Tough night and a tough day for the ACC. We'll talk about it next. Packer and Durham on New Year's Eve continues in a moment on ACC.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham. Wes, here's another great list. So EJ Borghetti and the boys over there at Pittsburgh, they were down there in the ATL last night.
Yeah.
But another really impressive list of men and women that make it easy for us.
Absolutely right. Thanks to everybody at Pittsburgh and their sports information office. And, of course, you saw EJ and RJ Septic and all those guys yesterday with football. And we appreciate very much all the job that that Pitt has done for us this year as well. Which leads us to last night and the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl, which was already kind of an interesting game because Kenny Pickett wasn't going to play and Kenneth Walker III wasn't going to play. And then in about the first 11 snaps offensively for Pitt, it got really interesting. Abanacanda got hurt, and then Nick Patty got hurt, and the next thing you know, we're playing the depth chart game at the end of the year, Pack.
Yeah, here's Patty for the touch, and you're thinking, man, great run, but what you didn't see was, bam, landed on that left shoulder, and that was the end of the night for Nick Patty. Yeah, Pitt took the lead, or tied the game up at that point in time, 7-7, but that was it. No more Patty, and now all of a sudden you're going through the depth chart going, yikes, we're down to our third-string guy. Yeah. Man, it's still early in the game, but, you know, the good news, Wes, despite the injuries and the opt-outs and all that stuff, Pitt's up 21-10 going to the fourth quarter. Defense is doing a great job. They gave up a touchdown right from the get-go with a terrible field position. But it's 21-10 Pittsburgh going to the fourth quarter. And you kind of felt pretty good. I mean, seriously, if you're watching the game, you're like, all right, Pitt, you know, just go close this thing. This would be a great win. Your 12th win of the year going back to 1976. Yep. Last time you've had one of those deals, they just could not close. I mean, it was as simple as that.
Yeah.
And you give Sparty a lot of credit now. They had to go make plays, and they did. Here's the scoop and score in the third quarter to go up 21-10. But, man, Pitt, you just had it right there in front of you. But the thing that jumps out at me, Wes, about this game, and the biggest word in sports is if. If. Every time you hear the word if, everything that comes after it, you might as well just hum a song in your head for 10 seconds because it's kind of fantasy. But if, you know, Kenny Pickett plays, it just seems like that's a totally different game. And I know if you're a Sparty fan, you're going to say, hey, what if Kenneth Walker plays? Well, let me just say something real quick on this. Here's Kenny Pickett. We know he can sling it. We know Michigan State's secondary is pure garbage. Pitt, 170 yards passing in the game last night. A buck 70. Now, you're telling me if Pickett doesn't play, a buck 70 is all Pitt had in the air? Now, the flip side is Kenneth Walker's a great back. We knew him at Wake Forest. He had a phenomenal year at Michigan State. If he plays, Sparty had 56 yards rushing. So the two biggest names of that game before we ever had the opt-outs was Kenny Pickett and Kenneth Walker, right? The two biggest names. Pitt throws for a buck 70. Michigan State runs for 56. You think that made a difference in that game? You better believe it did.
Yeah, no question. And I think it goes back to the bigger question, bigger issue that we're finding in the postseason in many games, okay? Now, when we get to this afternoon at Arlington or tonight at the Hard Rock, it's not the issue, okay? Nor is it the issue, by the way, next weekend in Frisco, Texas, right? Nor is it the issue, I noticed the other night, in a game involving a G5 team. Ironically, now, not every G5 team, but the best players on teams that aren't in Power 5 and not playing in the CFP are more often than not taking the day off. And it's an issue. We are losing momentum with the postseason bowl. The bowl games themselves are now being kind of held hostage by the system pack, and that's the bigger issue that we're going to have to find a way to address. And now, people can say Christian McCaffrey, Leonard Fournette. I'll even throw Jalen Smith of Notre Dame. I thought that was a huge – when he got hurt in the Fiesta Bowl, I thought that was a major, major red flag to players in college football who had some semblance of a pro career on their mind. Are you really going to play in a bowl game? Because Jalen Smith, as you well know, missed almost all of his rookie year after being drafted by Dallas. It cost him millions of dollars. He's had an excellent career, but nonetheless, we've got an issue. We've got an issue here, and it needs to be addressed. Much like, you know, some of the bigger issues we've talked about in the last 18 months during the pandemic in college athletics. We've got to find a way around this, and there's no getting around it. Now, I mean, it's become a problem. It's affecting the quality of play that you're going to get in the games. And last night is a New Year's Six game, the first one, and it was impacted. Fair? I think so. I think very fair to make that statement.
Well, that's why I gave you the stats. I mean, Pitt threw for $170. Kenny Pickett would have had that in a quarter against Michigan State if he's right. playing. And Kenneth Walker doesn't run the football for Michigan State. They had 56 yards rushing. He would have had that in the first half and changed. So, yeah, it's an impact. Really, the exception to the rule this particular year was Clemson, right? Hey, mm-hmm. if ever there was a school that's used to being in the college football playoff that's playing in a quote-unquote lesser game, which was the Cheez-It, no disrespect to the good folks in Orlando, but you're not the college football playoff, Clemson should have been the team that had, like Ohio State,
you know, absolutely.
We got our stars. We're going to the Rose Bowl. We're not even playing. So, but Clemson's really the exception to the rule of all of this. But these games, there's 40-some of them, and let me be completely honest and upfront here. This network that we work for basically owns and operates the vast majority of them. But these games, if you're looking for, you know, hey, we got a great matchup, out of 43 games, we're due to have some games that are intriguing. I thought the Music City Bowl last night mm-hmm. was intriguing and fun to watch. But if you're looking for the best players to play, Wes, these are becoming glorified exhibitions. And that's basically exactly what they are. And, you know, calling them other than that, other than the college football playoff and a handful of New Year's Day six games, all these others are, hey, we watch them. The numbers, in fact, the ratings have been good. Sometimes there's people in the stands. Mm-hmm. The game you did down in Tampa was sold out. And again, that's kind of the exception to the rule. But they have become glorified exhibitions if you're going to start taking the best players out of the game. That's what it is.
And here's the other situation that's developing. The coaches are now, and we touched on this earlier in the week, the coaches who used to have a plan and a pretty clear idea of how to process all this and use bowl games to their advantages and things like that, well, they've lost all that. Why have they lost it? They've lost it part and parcel because of the early signing period. They've also lost it because the bowl game being a, quote, second spring practice, that doesn't happen anymore. Why? Because there are more bowl games being played now between the end of semester exams and before Christmas. So they don't have that ability to play and recruit. And, Pac, you know this from back in the 80s and 90s. Remember when teams would go to bowls, there weren't that many of them, and those bowl practice weekends on campus after semester exams would become essentially recruiting weekends leading into February.
Right.
They don't have that anymore.
Right.
There's no advantage to the bowl practice as it relates to a, quote, recruiting situation. Why? Because you got the signing day now in December. Here's the other aspect about this, and they've got an opportunity to change the dynamic if they want to, because the college football playoff's been a marvelous invention. It's been celebrated. It's been a win for everybody involved, okay? But the college football playoff has also created a caste system among college football teams that if you're playing in the college football playoff, you're one of those four teams that play today, you're living in a different neighborhood than the rest of the bowl games. And that includes the New Year's Six games, which, like last night, or the Fiesta Bowl, or the Rose between Utah and Ohio State. Look, there's a story in the Los Angeles Times that Ohio State sent back somewhere in the neighborhood of 15,000 tickets for the Rose Bowl. Ohio State's, their fans are not interested in going to the Rose Bowl. Okay, now the pandemic could play some role in that and things like that. We've got to find a way to bring the magic back to bowl games. Now, will a 12-team expanded playoff do that? Yes, but it doesn't fix the situation and the pressure that the coaches feel that if they're not in the college football playoff, then their game is just kind of an afterthought. How do we do that? That's where the alignment of the expansion of the college football playoff and kind of the reset of all this stuff that's going on, eligibility, NIL, everything else that we're talking about. I mentioned this last week on the show, or earlier this week on the show. Dana Holgorsen, in a conversation with me Sunday night, said he thinks most of these bowl games ought to be played in week zero and week one. He's not got a bad idea. It's a pretty legitimate idea when you think about it, because those are the type games that can draw interest in week zero and week one, and fans will go to those games to watch their teams play. And what's better than that, Pack? Unless there's some sort of preseason injury, most of those teams are going to play at 100%. 100% roster capacity. And you put, hey, you put North Carolina, South Carolina, and Charlotte to start the year. Well, we saw that 2 years ago. And they had a great crowd, right? I mean, you play Florida and UCF and Tampa in week one or week zero, you're going to have a huge crowd. You play the Purdue-Tennessee game in Nashville like you did yesterday. You play that beginning of the year, you're going to have a big crowd. That's the kind of game. He's got some serious logic behind it, and I agree with him.
Well, we'll let the smart people figure all that out. You mentioned North Carolina and South Carolina. They did play yesterday here in the backyard.
Oh, boy.
And at least one team did. Wes, I got to tell you something. I was so wrong about this game. Both teams were 6-6 going into it, and we said beforehand the vibe of this 2 6-6s were very different. For South Carolina, hey, man, we're going to a bowl. Shane Beamer, first year, life's good. North Carolina 6-6, total disappointment based on expectations. And because of that, and the last time I saw South Carolina play, they couldn't get a first down against Clemson. I thought North Carolina would be highly motivated, coming off a tough loss to their arch rival, don't want to finish the year under 500. You're playing a South Carolina team that offensively really struggling. And lo and behold, you know what, again, I was in the air when this thing was going on. South Carolina punked North Carolina yesterday. They punked them. They're a double-digit underdog. They win by 17. I'm not going to sugarcoat this. You know what? You've got to be motivated to play. And when you're down 18-0 to South Carolina, I give South Carolina all the credit in the world. Like I said, I was dead wrong yesterday on this game, but I was astounded at how little interest North Carolina appeared to have. I mean, you were flat out of the gate and got run over. 301 yards rushing by South Carolina. That is want to. And you know what? I think if you're Mack Brown and company, you go from a preseason top 10 to a 6-7 season, and this isn't going to be pretty, what I'm going to say, but status quo is not good enough. You've got to fix that, because there's too much talent in Chapel Hill for that team to be sub 500 at the end of the year. No way you can convince me otherwise.
Pack, there are a couple of things that went on with Carolina yesterday. Number one, a disturbing trend, and Brian Ives pointed this out. North Carolina was outscored 63-7 away from home in the first quarter this year. The only touchdown, the only points Carolina scored in the first quarter this year away from Keenan Stadium was Sam Howell's touchdown run at Georgia Tech at Mercedes-Benz in late September. How does that happen?
Well,
I
can give you an answer.
It's just that,
you know, the answer is, you know, that to me, you know, coaching matters, Wes. You know, you can have all the dudes and creatures and all that stuff you want, but you got to be motivated to play. And again, I'm not taking anything away from South Carolina, because they showed up to play. They had a plan and were excited to play. But North Carolina is better than that. I'm sorry. And if you're a North Carolina fan offended by what I just said, you're not being real with yourself, because that was not good enough for North Carolina. That's you're better than that.
Look, there's going to have to be some checking in during the spring. Kind of how does all this work? How do they come? I mean, because more than likely Sam Howell played his last game yesterday. So is it Drake May's ball? I mean, you got to get some of the offensive line reworked, the defensive situations. It's going to be our spring game coverages in the ACC. North Carolina will be one we'll really want to kind of dig in on to see kind of where they've gone in the aftermath of this. By the way, thanks to everybody in Chapel Hill as well as we go to break. The sports information folks who help us out there across the board here. Dana Galen, Jody Jones, Steve Kirshner, Matt Bowers, Blake Clifton, Lauren Staff, everybody in Chapel Hill has done a marvelous job helping us bring you the best of the Atlantic Coast Conference. When we come back, we're off to the banks of the St. John River this morning. John Curry and the Deacons have taken over the First Coast Pack. I don't know if you're aware of this. Wake Forest is riding into Jacksonville today for the Tax Slayer Gator Bowl at 11 a.m. And John Curry's up early with us next on ACCN.
Packer and Durham. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
We've got women's basketball, a quadruple header for you on Sunday. Kiana Smith, Haley Van Lith pack, number 3 Louisville and number 16 Georgia Tech in Atlanta, and their balanced scoring attack. Should be a good one. Coverage starts at noon Eastern. Remember, quadruple header Sunday right here on ACC Network, streaming live on the ESPN app.
Yep, Chester is fired up for Haley Van Lith. That is his favorite player, Haley Van Lith.
Yeah, she's lefty. Rolling too.
Yep. And by the way, number one team in women's basketball got beat last night. Just saying, if you're Louisville and NC State, maybe moving up in the polls. Got to go take care of your own business. We'll see what happens.
Hey, by the way, big win last night for Kenny Brooks, fresh off a show appearance.
Yep. And for Wake Forest women's basketball, won in overtime against Florida State last night.
All right. And speaking of, ladies and gentlemen, please let's go live to the First Coast. There he is. A little steam in his stride doing, this morning, man? Off Jen Hoover's victory last night. Here's John Curry, the Deacons athletic director. Look at you. You're ready to go. Are you getting ready to get on the bus to ride to the stadium?
We're getting ready to get on the bus. You see the guys are loading up behind me. They're coming out of their last session. I got to tell you, man, it's about 75 degrees, and Gigi and I hot-footed it over here to make sure we made the bus. I'm sweating. It feels like a football game.
Well, first of all, number one, congratulations on all the success, not just a football deal. Basketball is rolling, all your sports. You've done a great job. Second of all, a little disappointed that we're not getting a shot of you on the 17th at Sawgrass, getting a quick 18 in before you get out there for this morning kick. I thought you might be able to squeeze that in there before we get to a little Gator Bowl action this morning.
There was no Sawgrass appearance here. We're up at Amelia Island, and nice. It's a beautiful setting here, but we're a little far north of the city. We're on the beach. Life's pretty good here in Florida, Mark.
Yeah, you know, that's the way. Hey, that's how you roll when you keep doing this bowl after bowl after bowl deal. Six consecutive bowls for the Deacs, man. I would have expected nothing else. If you would have been showing up at the Holiday Inn on Frontage Road outside of Jacksonville, I'd have been very disappointed with you. But I know how you guys roll. I know how you roll.
Well, we do like to be wise in how we spend money, but we prefer to spend it on our student athletes. So we're taking great care of them.
I like it.
Okay, let me, for clarity here, are we at the site of the ACC spring meetings, John?
I believe that we are. I believe that we are.
Okay.
It's a good site.
Well, Himalayan sea salt.
Let me say this, John. Packer is a big aficionado of the Himalayan sea salt in the men's room. So just so you know, if you could pick up just a portion of that and you know, bring it back in a plastic bag for Pack, that'd be appreciated.
I will keep my eyes open for some Himalayan sea salt, and if we can fit it in the car, we will fit it in the car. Bring it back for you.
Hey, John, I've got my new Christmas mug that says refill with bourbon, and if you can refill that with Himalayan sea salt, that right there would cost you about $250.
We'll take care of that. But speaking of coffee mugs, I wasn't going to bring this up, but you know, my football coach got this great extended contract and big thing, and he got a coffee mug, and I came to the show, and I haven't gotten a coffee mug.
Well, here's how it works. No, here's how it works, Coach. There are standards. We do appreciate you making the effort to come to the basement, but you have to have 10 appearances, double-digit appearances, to officially qualify for the mug. And I threw an extra one in there because I found two. That's the last two I found. I said, well, I'm going to send them both to Clausen in a handwritten note. So in case he puts one in the dishwasher, you get the Czechoslovakian collection because all the letters get screwed up. And so I figured if he messes one up, he'll still have one. Yeah. So you're closer. Well, by the way, this is your eighth appearance on the show. You are two away from the coffee mug. Two away.
Well, you guys can talk to my agent, and we'll work.
Look behind you, John. Hey, John.
Look who's
John.
Here. That's the guy with all the
look
coffee.
Look who's
mugs.
Here. You know, the guy with all the
coffee. He's got the big, long contract, and he's got lots of coffee mugs.
Okay. All right.
I mean, this is great.
Let's
TV.
Get to the – I want to get to the game because, number one, I want to go to the external side of the game before we get to the details of – you know, Texas A&M checking out and Rutgers checking in. First of all, what has it meant to Wake Forest to be on the First Coast in Jacksonville? And as you mentioned, a drivable trip for many alums in the Southeast, but also a place where nationally a lot of Wake Forest friends and those graduates can get to a game like this.
It is a drivable trip, and I especially commend those who persevered through that tight stretch from on I-95 from the 26 intersection to the Georgia line. We got to get the South Carolina DOT to work on that a little bit. But it's great. We had a great session last night with about 1,500 Wake Forest friends and family and alums, player families at the stadium for our traditional night before the game pregame event. It was really awesome. Fireworks, the whole deal. I think it's been fun for our team. It's been easy for their families to get here and enjoy some time together. And, of course, when you got not a cloud in the sky for most of this week and 75 degrees and you're out at the high school on Bermuda grass, you know, sweating, it really feels like a bowl experience is supposed to feel.
John, there have been multiple opportunities for teams in the ACC to have achievement wins in the bowl system, right? Clemson gets their 10th win, 11 consecutive years now for Dabo and his guys. NC State gets the bowl trophy, says, hey, we're counting that as our 10th win. Pitt last night had a chance to win 12 for the first time since 1976. And the Deacs have that opportunity this morning against Rutgers. 11 wins. What would that mean for you and for Coach and this program, big picture?
Well, it's a great accomplishment for our whole program and really a testament to the entire university's support of football. Football is important at Wake Forest. And as you can see with the investment in our facilities, the Coach Clausen's long-term commitment to our program, football is important, and bringing our university community together like this is important. But when you look at it, it's amazing how few teams have won 10 games in a particular season. Even in our own state, in the history of our state with Big Four football, there's not very many 10-win seasons. So for Wake Forest to have it second this year, a chance to win an 11th game for the second time of our history is very special. But we do consider this a stop along the journey. This is not the end of the journey for Wake Forest football.
John, we mentioned the game itself, and Greg McGarrity has taken over for Rick Catlin. He's done a phenomenal job with Jacksonville, and in particular this event, which is so important to that First Coast community, as you know. But obviously the bump with Texas A&M and kind of that 24-hour period where I guess you weren't sure you would get a team, and if you were, who you would get. Now, given kind of the landscape we've seen in this bowl season, that went pretty seamless. Take us through kind of, if you will, the arrival of Rutgers onto this piece of property today.
Well, first of all, we got to give some credit to Greg McGarrity. You know, he retired as Georgia's AD. You know, we've all known Greg for decades. And he slides into this bowl job where all he does is play golf all year. And little did he know how hard he was going to be working over the last several weeks, especially. But you can't credit that organization enough. You know, this is a one of the traditional community-based, nonprofit, community-driven participatory groups. The Green Jackets are all around town. The chairman, John Deuce, they've been terrific in what they've done for student-athlete opportunities and student-athlete memories and fan memories over the last 77 years is really remarkable. I commend Rutgers. You know, there's not too many teams that could reconstitute after being away for 3 or 4 weeks. There was a really nice article on ESPN.com about Rutgers and how they pulled it together, and their guys wanted to go play even though they hadn't practiced in a little while. And so for me, even in that moment of time, that 24 hours where we weren't quite sure who the opponent would be, but all of a sudden we had all these teams that said they wanted to be here and wanted to come play in a bowl. That was really heartening, because sometimes you hear people say, well, the bowls don't matter, or there's too many bowls, or all that kind of stuff. Bowl experiences are special for student athletes. They're special for coaches and staff. They're special for university community members. They're special for band and cheerleaders like our Spirit of the Old Golden Black. So it was really heartening that they were so desirous of being here.
John, we're going to talk to Abu Corrigan coming up in the next hour. And I suspect that both you and Boo, when we have a quote-unquote downtime, will have some war stories about how crazy that 48-hour period is where you say, hey, we're going bowling, we're excited about being there, then all of a sudden the rug's pulled from underneath you, and you're like, oh, my God, we may not even have a game. You just discussed all the people involved to figure out a way to get this game today. Boo, unfortunately, in NC State, didn't even get the game, even though they were out in San Diego. I just had a curiosity sake. Did you have I know you've been busy, but did you have any conversation with Boo about how crazy that process is of trying to find somebody at the midnight hour?
Well, we've been in close contact over really the last couple of weeks as this Omicron virus has popped up and things have gotten more heated. And so, you know, Boo and I were on multiple ACC calls, et cetera. And then the day of their game, that was actually my golf day, Wes. I played golf that morning. I get back. I'm about to take a nap. I text Boo good luck in his game. I take a nap and I wake up to this special report that they're not going to be able to play. So that was certainly a very, very sad for all involved. And, you know, my heart really goes out to that whole program, that team, because they've worked so hard, like our program has worked so hard, to be here and be healthy and be ready to play.
I think, John, today is an unbelievable opportunity for Wake Forest. You've touched on that. But in many respects now, here's the flag of the league in your hand, too. You know, this league could use one more W going out the door in the bowl season. We've lost a few, as they say, not only on the field. We lost the chance to play 4 or 5 more.
Well, the commissioner texted me his expectations last night. He said he was counting on us, and I'm counting on Coach Clawson and these guys to hold the flag high. This is a great football league, and certainly we're going to have an opportunity today against a Big Ten team to show that on national television. And it's a great day for ACC exposure as we lead into these two semifinals this afternoon. The Wake Forest game at 11 o'clock will be the only game on. There's no opposition. So it's a great opportunity for our program to show off that WF again, to highlight the things that have been accomplished by this team and this group of student athletes over the last several years.
John, just want to again thank you for all your time during the year and everything you do for us. But I will also say you just made Packer and Durham history. This is the first interview. This is show 533. This is the first interview we've ever had in which a guy walked in the background with his golf bag in a lobby of a hotel during an interview. So you're living a good life, and we hope that continues on the field as you take on Rutgers later this morning.
Hey, we're trying to give our viewers and our ACC fans what it's really like on the inside. Now, I will tell you this. The bus will wait for Coach Clawson. It will not wait for me, okay? So I got to go to bus number 4, the hangers-on bus, and I got to go now because they're about to leave, okay? Right. So we got to sign off. But happy
good
to
luck.
You guys. Appreciate all you're doing for our league, and let's go Deeks.
You got it, man. Good luck.
All right, thanks. John Curry, athletics director at Wake Forest. Don't turn around too quick, John. They'll knock you straight in the floor coming down the hall. Thanks to everybody at Wake Forest, not only John Curry and his great staff, but the Sports Information Group. Will Pantages heads that group up. They do a phenomenal job as well taking care of us here on Packer and Durham. When we come back, oh, we haven't forgotten about you, Hoops. We got some basketball. We got some basketball. You talk about a project that's getting more difficult by the week. This one. Accounting is next on ACCN.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham. Hey, Wes, the list continues, right?
Yes, sir.
We keep talking about all the men and women that make it easy for us, and here's another group, Duke University.
Yeah, these folks, I mean, across all sports here, really, and Mike DeGeorge, Kat Kastner help us in men's basketball and football. Lindy Brown with women's basketball. Sarah Leggett's been involved. Jeff, I mean, again, thank you to everybody at Duke for helping make Packer and Durham a go on ACCN. And we welcome you back to the New Year's Eve ride. Boo Corrigan coming up at 8:30. The NC State Athletics Director will talk to him about the trials and tribulations of San Diego. Good heavens. We're going to learn a lot. We're going to learn a lot about college football and college athletic communications from what transpired in San Diego, kids.
Or the lack thereof.
Well, yeah. So, and you like how I tie that to accounting? More to come in just a moment. Let's go to mine first. Look, this process is it's difficult, okay? Because you're doing comparative shopping. Now, remember, I was 2 weeks ago with some of this. So here's where I am. I put Duke, Carolina toward the top. I think they're playing pretty well. I think they're the two best teams in the league right now. I think Miami is emerging. That's a nice win against NC State. Louisville, I like the win against Wake Forest. I thought it was important to protect your home court. Deeks are down a couple. Clemson's up a couple after shelling Virginia. We haven't seen the Tigers since then. Syracuse up a couple. Notre Dame's up a couple with the win at Pitt. Virginia Tech. Florida State, we haven't seen. NC State, the other night, you were right there. Road win would have been good. Virginia down one. Georgia Tech hadn't played. BC kind of hadn't heard from you. Pitt lost the other night at home late in the ball game on the Prentice Hub 3. So, to me, kind of that glob again, Pack. The same, three through about eight. Three through about nine, ten maybe. I need clarity, man. I'm not getting it.
Matthew, we were we're similar in some respects, but we got some serious differences in our list. I'm going to give you my Sweet 16. There's no argument at number one, but after that, I think we're all over the place. I've got Miami up. You know what? They're hot. They are red hot.
Yeah.
Rallied past NC State. They've already beaten Clemson. Nobody's talking about them. Louisville, Malik Williams is back. Nice win against Wake Forest. The Swiss down a couple. Forbes has got them. I mean, they've been a great story. I still buy Virginia Tech. I know you look at the standings and like, Pack, when the Hokies. I just think they're really a good club. Clemson's starting to wear on me a little bit. That was a really big win against Virginia. They ran the Hoos out of their own building. I got North Carolina seventh. You got them second. The answer is probably somewhere in between, to be honest with you, Wes. That Kentucky game still bothers me. I mean, I don't know what that was.
Yeah.
It's kind of like North Carolina football yesterday. I'm not sure what that was, but I think North Carolina's got an upside to be one of the top two or three teams. I got the Bayheims at eight. Florida State, like you said, haven't seen them. Notre Dame, even though I got them down, that was a nice win the other night against Pitt. They had to have it. The whole combination of BC, Virginia, the defenders, which would be Georgia Tech, NC State, Pitt. Man, put them in a bag. Shake them up. Pull one out. Whatever you want. And 16th this week, UCLA's communication skills. Not very good. Not very good at all. So I know it's a football thing, but I got to put it in there. So UCLA's communication skills, the Sweet 16 this week.
I agree with that totally on the 16. I don't disagree with you on Carolina. I think you're right.
They're
the
weird.
Kentucky thing, no question. But here's the part, too. Do we surmise that the Kentucky is an outlier or is it a habit, right? In other words, do you remember you had Purdue, Tennessee, then you came back, you won a few games, beat Michigan, felt good, and then all of a sudden Kentucky happens. Do you now go win a couple games, feel good, another one? See, that's the thing. You can't let it become every other or every once in a while if you're Hubert Davis as you continue to grow his team. I think this time off is going to be pretty interesting. Carolina lost a couple games. Now, they're going to play Boston College on Saturday, right? Because I'm chronicling my schedule here for the weekend.
Sunday.
They're playing Sunday. So, but the game is going to be played, which is the key element here.
We hope.
Because right now, we have 1, five, six. We have seven Atlantic Coast Conference games. Conference games that have been postponed, Pac. I got seven on my list. In that particular situation, it's going to be really, really interesting to see kind of how all this transpires. And it kind of affects momentum. I mean, Carolina was supposed to play Virginia Tech the other night. We know about all these games that were staged, Georgia Tech and Syracuse, you know, those type deals. So, you know, we'll see how this goes, but it makes accounting difficult, man.
Well, it's not difficult. It's impossible. I mean, Duke's won, and then, hey, good luck. Throw darts and figure it out. What I'm excited about with the ACC men's basketball season moving forward in 22, who can get hot and start putting together a couple weeks of wins? That's what I want to see. I'm not worried about Duke, all right? I know they didn't play this week. They got the COVID pause. They lost a road trip to Clemson. They lost a road trip to Notre Dame. I'm putting Duke over here. For me, right? They're over there. Right. Coach K's guys, I like where they're going. Everybody else, Wes, and I do mean everybody else, who can start stringing together wins? All of a sudden, old Notre Dame has won three in a row, right? That was a big win for Mike Bray's guys the other night when they were down on the road at Pitt. Miami is smoking hot, like I said. You know, NC State's going the other direction. All of a sudden, the Wolfpack can't seem to find a W, whether it be Wright State or up 8 with 11 minutes ago at Miami. They got to find a win ASAP, and they've got Florida State coming to town this weekend, which is a huge game. So I just want to see of everybody. All of a sudden, you know, Buddy Boeheim is going to join us in hour number three. He's starting to get his stroke back and putting points and all that. And I still think Syracuse can go on a run here. I want to see who gets hot and goes on a – you know, wins five of six, wins four in a row in back-to-back weeks, and who could emerge from this cluster? And it's not even a glob. It's just a cluster of teams this side of Durham, North Carolina, and could start making a run. It could be a North Carolina. I mean, they're talented enough to do it, but everybody seems to have one of those stub-your-toe moments when you start to fall in love with them, and you go, oh, yikes, what was that all about? So, like Clemson is a team that, you know, it's a shame they didn't get the Duke game at home this week. But they're starting to play better. And again, you go back and some of those big leads that they lost. Brad Brunell was talking about that the other day. There's a lot of teams I think you can make the case. Louisville can give you a, hey, we stunk it up at Western Kentucky, but you know what? We found a way to win at home against Wake Forest. Williams is back. It changes our lineup. There's so many teams in this league that can go in any stinking direction. And I think that's the intrigue part moving forward in 22.
I totally agree with you. I think it's going to be really interesting to watch when we get into just almost conference exclusivity as to watch week-to-week momentum with some of these teams. You know, Steve Forbes has done a really good job with Wake Forest. That's a hard loss the other night, Louisville. Now what do? They turn around and go to Miami. I mean, that's a team, and you mentioned it. Miami's got, I mean, they're playing loose, and I mean, they're getting really good production out of a lot of players. Miami's a different deal than they were 3 weeks ago.
You know what's going to be important, Wes? What's going to be really important in this league? Again, I'm putting Duke over here, right? Everybody else, what I hope doesn't happen is that everybody beats each other up. And all of a sudden, you just got everybody at 8-12 or 10-10. I mean, that is not going to be helpful to the conference as far as the NCAA tournament. It may be great that every night's a competitive game, but you need some breakaways here. That's the thing. You need four or five teams that have kind of a breakaway where all of a sudden they're 13-7, 14-6, 12-8 as far as the NCAA tournament. Because if everybody this side of Duke is about the same team and everybody, you win one, you lose one, you win one, that's going to be problematic for March Madness. I'm just saying.
Yep. Right?
So I want to see who can be those breakaway teams in 22.
You're exactly right. And speaking of 22, we did this little exercise a year ago, and we brought it back again. 22 to watch in 22. We profile 22 ACC student athletes and a couple others that you may need to keep an eye on as we turn the calendar tonight. We'll check in on that next. Packer and Durham, ACC Network.
Packer and Durham.